everyone, to I think it's our fourth episode now of Two Beers with Steve. Tonight we have two special guests, Joe Mancini and Rick Hartman. They're kind of regulars around our roundtable, but tonight they're the special guests because they took off this past weekend and went down and went to the Lowesville seminar with Chris Martinson. And I don't think it's a crash course seminar anymore. I think it's advanced beyond that point. But now it's Monday after that weekend. And I didn't realize until just maybe a few minutes ago that you guys have had all weekend with Chris Martinson. And then I called you to come back on Monday to talk to me about more Chris Martinson. So I think we should probably do a proper introduction for Rick and Joe like we do for almost all of our guests. And just ask them you know, who they are, where they come from. I know we have talked to Rick and Joe before, but since we're going to have them on as special guests, I think we should get a little bit more background on you guys, you know. So, Rick, why don't you go ahead and kick it off and give us a little background this time. You know, we know a little bit about you, but just give us a little bit more.
Okay. Rick Hartman. We live in Virginia Beach. Retired from the Navy in 2003. Work for the government now as a research analyst. With the Undersea Surveillance Command. Catherine and I have been investing and trading in the market for the last 7 years, and she kind of stumbled onto Chris Martinson's site about 10 months ago or so, and gradually wore me down and got me over to the site to check out Crash Course. And the more I read, the more I realized that Chris was on target with the message he was trying to get out. So she helped organize and was the driving force behind getting this Lowesville seminar put together. And we went and had a really, really good time, as Joe and Lucas will attest to. I don't know. What else are you looking for?
Well, that's pretty much about it. I didn't know Lucas was on here, so we have a third special guest tonight, Lucas Marshall, who I think he's been on here before.
We have a fourth and a fifth, because Catherine's here, and a good friend of ours, Esther, who was also at the conference.
Wow, okay, so we're going to get a lot of input
tonight.
They're
in the room with me, so.
Okay, yeah, like I said, we're going to get a lot of input and different views on different things, but, you know, when you say Kat stumbled upon the website, how exactly did she stumble upon the Chris Martinson website?
She's Rick? On her way to explain that.
I was actually on a political blog, and they made mention of Chris's site. And I had been trying to disprove the dollar going to zero all summer, and Chris kind of confirmed it was going to go to zero. So he was acceptance and not denial for us, or for me. Rick was in denial about 6 months after.
I was in ignorance. I jumped straight to acceptance.
But we've been studying this stuff for years through the stock market. Just our stock teacher didn't put the pieces together in the same way that Chris did.
Uh-huh.
So, two different things. Yes, we cover the economy and stock class, but mainly we focus on the market. So.
Okay. Joe, you want to give us a little bit more background? I know last time you said you're just, a computer software engineer, but just give us a little bit more on how you stumbled upon the site.
Sure. Joe Mancini. I live in Southern Connecticut. I'm a computer programmer for a law firm. I stumbled upon the site, I think it was sometime last summer. Somebody mentioned it off of one of Ron Paul's websites. And I think I started watching the Crash Course. Maybe I think it was in the teens somewhere, yeah, that's about it. I'll keep it short.
Okay, you know, I should probably say at this point, it's we, all of us here tonight are members of a website called www.chrismartinson.com, and there's an excellent video series called The Crash Course, which we've all seen, and so Lucas, I'm going to introduce you at this point. Are you on right now?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. So I think you've met with us before, is that right?
Yeah, the first time around.
Okay, so you want to give us a little background how you stumbled upon the site?
Sure. I ran across it looking at a gold and silver investing website. I had a link to it, the Crash Course, and that was about around Thanksgiving this last year. So right after, I think it was the full 20 videos were already all there.
Well, I think we've got everybody, and we kind of introduced everybody. So the way that I want to start this off is that I kind of want to get a feeling for the environment. You know, so can you, you know, Rick can probably paint a pretty good picture. So tell me what it was like down in Lowesville.
Well, the area itself was absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it was in the Shenandoahs. You had to go through the Shenandoahs to get there from wherever you were coming from. And it was just, I mean, idyllic. I mean, you know, Lucas, Joe, jump in. It was perfect weather. The maples and the tulip poplars were coming into leaf, and it was perfect. And the fact that we had, you know, 63 like-minded people collected in one spot made it even better.
Yeah, I'll add on. As much as I loathed the long drive down, it was a spectacular location. It was great to just be away from everything, just focus on the crash course, the seminar, and whatnot, being together with Chris and Becca and 63 other people.
So was it like a cottage type, you know, like a Boy Scout camp almost?
It was a Baptist church camp. Then I think, you know, church youth groups and organizations like that are their main clientele. It's a conference center, and apparently it's used a lot. There were two other groups there while we were there. And the way it was set up, there was a hotel up at the top of the valley. And then there was a conference center and a dining hall, and everybody ate there together. And then there were cabins that the different groups had, and what there were, I think, Joe, what, 16 in a cabin? And it was, I mean, bunk beds. You know,
sleeping bags.
So it was like a military style, back to old school for Rick.
I'll tell you though, the camp staff was wonderful. You know, the food was good. You know, I've had better, I've had much, much, much worse. But they really did a good job taking care of us.
Okay, so I think we got the scene set. So when you guys first got there, what was the first, you know, first call of action? You know, was there an introduction sort of ceremony?
And well, the first official ceremony. Function was dinner.
Uh-huh.
We kind of checked people in, and since people were coming in from all over the place, you know, it took a while for people to get there and get checked in, get their stuff set up in the cabins. And then we had dinner together, and then right afterwards we kicked off, and Chris and Becca gave the intro, and really, I mean, at 7:30 Friday night, we hit the ground running.
Yeah. Is this the first time that you've met Chris in person?
Yeah, it was for us.
It was, because like the last time we talked to Joe, and he had seen Chris up in the I think it was up near Albany or somewhere, or it might have been right there in Rowe, Massachusetts. He was like, it's just different seeing Chris in the flesh when you're used to hearing him and you're used to seeing videos with him. It's just a little bit different experience.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's I've been lucky to meet him twice, and it's you know, it's fantastic. You know, to actually meet somebody like him in person, it's great.
And then, so 7:30 was when you said you hit the ground running that night.
Yeah, I think that's when that when we started, Joe Lucas, wasn't it right around 7:30?
Yeah, about something like about that.
And what did he jump into? Did he go right into the crash course, or was it a little bit different? Or did he lay out just kind of outline what the weekend was going to be like?
Okay, all right. The first thing they did was they led off with a discussion entitled "So What Do I Do?" And it was kind of a kickoff. And a quick background on why Chris gave the crash course. You know, he made it very clear he's not a doom and gloom guy, and that he believes that, you know, we can implement the changes, but he kept stressing that his goal was to get the crash course word out to as many people as we could. I guess it was kind of like the 40,000-foot flyover. They talked about the schedule for the weekend. We were going to go through a crash course toolbox, and we'll get into that.
Uh-huh.
And then they had introductions, where people were coming from. We had people from Canada, Mexico, California, Georgia, New Mexico, North Carolina, Maryland, Massachusetts, Virginia, New York, Connecticut, and do you remember anybody else, Joe or Lucas? I think that was it. Ohio also. We had people from Ohio.
Ohio.
Okay, were you surprised by the people that are, you know, what were the people like? I mean, were they middle-aged? Were they a lot older? Were they a lot younger than you might have expected?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you put a picture up and ask somebody to assemble them in whatever group you thought it was,
uh-huh.
I don't know. There were doctors, attorneys, retired people, students, young people, entrepreneurs, small business owners. I mean, you had everything. And I think the age ran from, you know, like maybe 25, 26 up to mid-70s.
Really? Okay, that makes for a good diverse group for discussion. You know, you got the guys who are like, we had Daniel Amadori, who was saying, you know, he likes the young people to have that fresh pulse in the market. But then it's also nice to have those seven-year-olds, like my father, who have a different view and say, well, I've seen this all happen before, you know. So it makes for great discussions. Or how do the introductions go?
Well, it was just, you know, everybody kind of bounced around and said where they were from. We didn't really spend a whole lot of time, but, you know, you kind of looked around and...
You recognize anybody from the site, you know, by their
Well, yes,
their call
signs. Steve S. was there from Leesburg. Mike Pilott was there with his friend David. Mike's mom was there. And then we had eight or nine people from our stock class, friends of ours from Virginia Beach, all went up with us. So I think we probably had the largest group of people that knew each other. You know, I think everybody pretty much made it a point to bounce around and eat with different people each day and each meal. And I mean, that's what I did. And you just wanted to meet everybody because there were so many people there that knew different things and had different experiences. You wanted to get a chance to talk to them and see what they knew that you didn't.
Yeah. So then that was the first night, and then in the morning, what did you guys kick off with? Was it breakfast and then right into it?
Yeah, well, they did a real quick review of Crash Course stuff on Friday night, and then we wrapped it up. Actually, we wrapped it up kind of early, and then I was kind of surprised. Weren't you, Joe, that we stopped as soon as we did? I thought we might spend a little more time getting into stuff, but they jumped, you know, they laid out the agenda and off we went, and then we got at it first thing Saturday morning.
Yeah, it was fairly quick. I mean, sometimes it's good, as I told Chris, the first part was kind of repetitive, but sometimes you need the... You just need the reinforcement of what the crash course is, and you know, I mean, Chris threw in some new data in there as well. It's just good to set the foundation for the weekend.
You guys very briefly went over the crash course on Saturday morning, and then just kind of
they talked about problems versus predicaments.
Uh huh.
Problems can be solved with multiple courses of actions. Predicaments have a much narrower solution set. So that kind of, he used that to talk about elements of the crash course in what, whether they were a predicament or a problem. And when you look at, you know, national failure to save, historic levels of debt, the different bubbles, peak oil, uranium, palladium, germanium, whatever, EM, and the environmental issues, all of those together kind of create a predicament. Then he talked about what he sees coming. He called it the rough patch, and that it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Or as I like to say, it's going to get worse before it gets worse. a lot of that stuff that you're talking about right now is Chris was on the Financial Sense NewsHour last week. And I thought it was spectacular. You know, it's talking about the same things that you're talking about right now. About the problems versus predicament, and he uses a really good example. He says, if you're clinging to the side of a cliff, you have a problem. You know, they have several options that you could choose from. But if you fall off that cliff, you have a predicament because you're gonna crash at some point. And so that's the distinction he makes between problems and predicaments. I thought that Financial Sense News Hour was excellent, and it's probably the best Financial Sense News Hour I've seen, because, like I told other people here, that it's really investment heavy, and I thought that Chris might go that way on the podcast, but actually he just stuck to like the Crash Course series. So I think that's kind of what he was getting at when he started off, like on Saturday morning. It was just kind of outlining the problems that are out there right now.
There was a real good session on some of historical quotes. He read a bunch of quotes from various, you know, periodicals and journal sources and people from 1929 through 1932, and you know, changed the name, and it's the stuff that's being said today.
Really,
the worst is over. The rate of decline is slowing. You know, all of those things were said back in 1929. And it's kind of eerie that they're being said again by the same people, you know, Treasury, presidents, other folks like that, and
helicopter bed.
And then you move past the Crash Course, and then you move into what was the next thing you talked about?
Well, that was the overview Friday night. Saturday morning, he went into some detail, and dug down a little bit deeper in those areas. And as it turned out, I don't know if you saw his post on the site today, but it seems like this group was very, very prepared. And it wasn't until Saturday afternoon that somebody said, "Hey, Chris, you know, we all get it. We all believe Crash Course. We all understand 3 E's and that the bottom's going to fall out. What can we do?" So, in hindsight, I think everybody there kind of had accepted that, you know, something was going to happen in the economy, the environment, in energy.
So you think that at that point,
spend time on it, let's get down to business and talk about what we can do.
Up until that point, it was kind of like he was convincing people of, here's the data, here's the facts, and it's going to get bad. It's going to get worse before it gets worse.
It was kind of like, you know, if there's anybody out there who doesn't believe yet, you know, here's some more data. And then, I mean, it was good, I thought, to get some of the the updated information and the more recent stuff. But it kind of confirmed what most of us already knew.
Yeah.
Although there were some really good discussions on commodity pricing with the backwardation and, you know, different elements of that I thought were interesting. And, you know, then we got into it.
And what do you mean by that?
Meat and potatoes started in the afternoon when we started putting together the Crash Course Toolbox.
Okay. And what is the Crash Course Toolbox?
I'll do the magnifying glass. And I know Chris has talked about it, but it was great to – we did an exercise. And when you read things, is it a fact? Look for facts or opinions or beliefs in the article. Opinions are okay if it's somebody's opinion. If it's, you know, if it's Paul Krugman, it's probably most likely it's his opinion. But if it's a story about the economy, you know, are there facts in there, or is stuff baked in there? So Chris gave us an article. We got into groups and we went through and kind of, we broke out our magnifying glass and looked what the facts are and the opinions and beliefs. We marked those out. It was a good exercise. I'm now a slower reader because I read things slowly to see if it's a fact or opinion. But I think ultimately it'll make everyone better to understand what the data looks like.
And then Lucas, what do you think? What did you think of the Crash Course toolkit?
You know, I didn't take the best of notes, but I think the thing that I took the most out of it, of all the major points, was when they got to the prioritizing. And I think that might have been one of the toolbox items. I'm not sure, but it focused a lot, quite a portion of Saturday, on assessing our self assessments and then going over a list of priorities and putting those into levels of priorities, which he talks a little bit about towards the end, the last video of the Crash Course. But it took it to a much more personal level. I'm kind of waiting for those slides to become available for us, for those of us that were there. So,
what are the slides?
My notes are slim.
And what were the slides?
Chris is going to post the all the slides from the weekend.
Oh, like a PowerPoint presentation that he had?
Yeah, that we did, yeah.
Okay. So what kind of what was the reaction by Chris when the guy made this statement? Okay, Chris, we get it, you know. This is we're here, we've all believe in what you're saying. Now just kind of tell us what we should do. I mean, was Chris kind of like taken out of his rhythm at that point? Was he shocked a little bit, or did he said, "Okay, I just wanted to check and I want to move on from that." You know, what was the kind of reaction that Chris had?
It seemed to me like he was thrown for a loop for just a second. I know there were other people in the room that shared the same thought.
We've said that here a few times, Rick. You know that we like Davos's post. We you know it's like we know it's bad. We get it.
He pretty much. I sensed that he kind of shifted, and they started to push right into it.
Good.
Before we go on, you want to. Joe, Lucas, do you want to talk about the whole toolbox and everything that was in there?
Sure.
Yeah, let's talk about
it. We had a magnifying glass, which was to help you differentiate between fact, opinion, and belief. Joe yep. covered that.
Yep.
Then there was the crowbar to to understand the power of beliefs. And what was it that Becca said?
It
may be limiting, it may be enhancing, but you got to just use that thing to dig in and figure out what it is you're believing. The fuzzy numbers, that was the tape measure, wasn't it?
The measuring tape, yeah.
These were physical things that he had in the toolbox, you know, or like was it just like a little booklet or something on that?
Well, really, it was just notes, you know, and then there was a lot of discussion on how to visualize things and use them for yourself as you approach the second half, which was the self-assessment and the prioritized tiered action list.
It was all...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it was all done on a PowerPoint presentation if that wasn't mentioned before. So when I said slides, I guess that's what I was referencing. And he had a PowerPoint presentation up on the front of where he was presenting.
Okay.
What else? The glue was the community.
Yeah,
That was good.
Handsaw, cutting through the noise.
Yes. Yeah.
Understand the noise source and what is behind the effort.
Compass.
Oh yeah, Catherine said the compass. What was the compass?
Well, my notes are better than yours.
I wish my wife was there, man. I'd have way better notes.
I'm going to find where I wrote down what the compass was.
So Kat, what was your take on the first morning, Saturday?
She's getting cookies out of the oven. She'll be right back.
Oh, I heard the beep in the background. I should have known.
The compass was the six stages of awareness. That's what that was.
Yes.
Yeah. And walk us through that.
Zero to shoe.
Oh, the sneakers, step zero. That was when you're trying to get the word out and you're getting other people, trying to get other people on board, is to start simple and easy, but at the same time have them understand that just taking that little, easy, simple step is a huge thing.
It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. You don't need to do things fast, but this is going to be a long period, hence the sneakers.
Okay, I was wondering how he's going to approach that too, because it's a difficult sell, as anybody here can tell you. Like when you approach somebody about the crash course, I mean, first off the bat, they're skeptical of you're pitching something. You know, you're into some cult, you're into some sort of pyramid scam. So there's maybe the slow and easy approach is probably the best way to do it. Drop a few hints and say what you're into. Or where you kind of see, kind of make a prediction, where you see things kind of going, and they might, out of curiosity, they might just follow you. But what was this? What's Chris's pitch for you? You know, when you say it's not a race, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. You know,
but there's places in the marathon that you need to sprint.
Okay.
During the marathon.
Okay.
And that was a good piece that we got out of the. Once they assembled this toolbox, the Crash Course Toolkit for us,
mm-hmm.
then we went into the self-assessment and kind of went through that and created a list of action items that we needed to get accomplished. And it was different for everybody. And then they took us through a drill where you prioritize those as, you know, tier one, two, and three. And it basically was, you know, the tier one stuff are the things that can be done relatively quickly and easily or cheaply, but need to get done. Those are kind of like the sprint things that they were talking about. And then there were the tier two and tier three issues that were a little bit more complex, either because they cost money or required, you know, some significant expenditure of funds, or you had to go learn something, and then we prioritized those. And you built your plan and how you were going to run the race based on that.
But do you want the rest of the toolbox?
Yeah, sure. Let's go through it all, because there was how many tools do you have?
Well, one of the tools. No, there's 11. One tool is the crash course itself.
Yeah.
Self-assessment is a tool, and visioning, symbolized with the binoculars, that you hold the vision of what you want the future to be, and you work towards that.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that everybody has failed to mention, Becca spoke as much as Chris spoke. So Becca yeah. had a huge part in the seminar.
Okay.
Yes, you're right.
Huh. And so when was the first breakup into groups?
That was Saturday.
Well, they put us into groups for different group exercises starting Saturday morning. And those were kind of exercises to, you know, assess the utility of the crash course tool. I think the first one was, you know, reading through a couple of articles and pulling out what was fact, opinion, and belief to kind of highlight what the magnifying glass was for. And then we stayed, you know, there were groups of four, and we stayed in those groups for the rest of the session. You know, we go off and discuss stuff, and then we come back, and then the whole group would just start shotgunning stuff and throwing stuff up, and we'd talk about it for a while. You know, and that they didn't really have the private or the, you know, the topical breakout sessions until Saturday night.
Okay.
After they had gotten us through what they wanted, what Chris and Becca wanted us to hear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They kind of set up the parameters. You know, it's kind of like it sounds to me. You know, when I'm sitting here in Southern Illinois, it sounds a little bit like hokey to me. You were doing these breakdowns things, but, you know, I mean, that's part of practice. You know, it's like, you know, that's why basketball players practice all the time to get better at something. So, so that's what the purpose of it was. But, you know, is that kind of what you guys thought? It was like, you know, this is just like practice. It's kind of hokey, but I understand the purpose of it. Or is it pretty intense?
I don't know that I'd call it hokey, because I think it was all kind of framed in the fact that we were there because we got it. We
yeah.
knew that the crash course stuff was real. And, you know, there was kind of a sense of, okay, well, there must be some people here that, you know, are just brand new and they haven't gone through this stuff, so I understand why we have to go through this stuff. And as it turned out, you know, at the end, we found out that that wasn't the case. Everybody mm-hmm. knew about the crash course. They were up on all of the stuff that was in there. And, you know, Joe, what do you think? Do you think that we could have jumped right into the, you know, 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon stuff at 9 o'clock Saturday morning?
Yeah, well, I actually enjoyed the toolbox. Some things more than others, especially the, you know, the facts, opinions, and beliefs. Probably earlier than Saturday. You know, that was really the what everybody was there for. What do I do? Type you know, the 4 p.m. Yeah, we could have started that earlier. Sure.
Probably the best part is when Chris and Becca told what they did.
Yes.
What happened?
Absolutely.
With that?
Well, that's kind of long.
Go ahead. Well, all the time in the world.
It was their story. You know, they basically said, you know, we woke up this day and we saw that things were like this, and this is what we started thinking about and doing. And, you know, listening to that talk for, I don't know, what was that, about an hour?
Mm-hmm.
It was an hour of just listening to all the things that they had done, the decisions they made, why they made them. You know, I guess in thinking back, I don't know that they would have been able to do that as effectively if they hadn't walked us through, you know, the toolbox in the detail that they did. But that alone, you know, that 1 hour of what they did, what Chris and Becca did, was worth the whole weekend.
Okay.
And oh, yeah,
it was more or less their personal story?
Yes.
Well, going from a corporate executive and, as Becca called herself, a PTA mom, and, you know, their 4,000-square-foot home, and leaving, you know, selling their home, leaving the area, and finding a new area. And, you know, they looked for they actually Googled to find the community they moved to. They had never been there before. Looked for the type of community they wanted, and that's how they ended up where they are.
And why did they choose the community that they're in now?
Well, they have
many different reasons.
Yeah, lots. One, you know, the transportation infrastructure was in place because mm-hmm. it's New England.
But
the area was mm-hmm. what was it? CSA, community supported mm-hmm. agriculture. They had there's a farm co-op.
But their goal was local, the reliance on the everything local as much as they could. Like Chris said, you know, he knew there's no fuel available in the area, but there's the farming, and the community where they could rely on each other for different things.
I like the milk the milk co-op experience she shared.
The chicken co-op.
They had a milk deal too.
Yeah.
And as Chris and Becca both said, this was about thriving and not surviving. They wanted to they want their lives to thrive and not just survive. And as I guess their children kind of speak volumes. They're all very happy, outgoing, skilled, better than most of us probably, except maybe Aaron. They very bright, intelligent, and they live with their preaching on the site exactly.
Yeah.
What you read about is, I mean, that's what they are about. And I guess the other thing that needs to be said is they aren't the only ones where they live who are doing this.
Really? Okay, that surprises me.
Everybody else there is. And they kind of found a place that they thought would be receptive to what it is that they're about. And I mean, they've got, I don't know, 15 or 19 families that are all... They all do this stuff. They had a big, you know, stockpiling food Saturday where they all got together. They all figured out how much food they were going to need based on the family size and caloric requirements and, you know, where they were going to store it. And the whole community got together and they sealed this stuff in Mylar bags. And, you know, if you had 12 people in your family, you got 80 pounds of pinto beans or whatever it was. And they showed pictures, and it was the whole community was sitting there putting this stuff together, and it you know, every family had piles, and they just took it off and stuck it in their basement. That was really, you just sat there going, I wish I could find that, you know.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
You could just see everybody digesting that thought, and I'm, you know, I was kind of chuckling to myself, there's no way something like that would work in Virginia Beach.
Well, yeah. Lucas or Joe, you want to talk about the milk? What they do with the milk?
Yeah.
We know we do that here.
They have a group of families that there's a dairy farm not too far away, and they each take turns bringing the milk to each of the people who pay for the milk. But what's interesting is they all leave their doors open, and the cash to pay for the milk is somewhere in the house, and they all know where it is. They go in, open these people's fridge if they're not home, put the milk in the fridge for them. The community,
wow.
that which emphasizes the community along with the reliance on the local, you know, local dairy for the the milk that they want. So it highlights two of those things about their community that I think all of us were drooling over, like, just dreaming we could just wake up and live there, you know?
Yeah, it's sort of like a utopia Massachusetts.
Well, so, and the community-supported agriculture. Yeah. They,
well, let Joe explain that. Or Joe?
Yeah, really quick. They're part of it's called a CSA. It's supported by the community. I think they said theirs is 18 acres. What they do, they pay $400 a year, and they get to pick, you know, all the vegetables that they want. They go every Thursday and, you know, pick away. Obviously, sometimes it's depends on the weather if it's a bad year for crop growing. But mm-hmm. That's one thing I had looked for, why they moved to that area, and they had said that was one of the things that they were looking for.
This is sort of like, did they mention it, like a transition town? Did they say that at any time?
And no, they called it I guess transition town is probably similar, but this, I think, was there was a farmer who lived there, and the community decided to support him. So, you know, they would pay that $400 or whatever it was, and, you know, he would buy seed and water and fertilizer or whatever else he needed. But I think they also said that from time to time they go and they help out on the farm. You know, it's not just pay $400 and go pick up a basket of tomatoes every Thursday. It was you actually go and the community goes and works on the farm. And it keeps the that local agriculture running to the benefit of not only the farmer but everybody that lives there.
I found a paragraph that Becca kind of summed up their community or their thoughts of what they hope was to build the community, sustainability, better habits, more fulfillment, new friends, deeper connections, simple life, personal responsibility, self-reliance, healthier life, systems in line with values, family staying together, stronger connection with nature, decreased anxiety, living in the moment, awakening of people, getting back to the Constitution, lies don't work, more open to the truth.
I wonder what the people of this town are like. I mean, are they, you know, because you're talking about Chris Martinson who's coming from an executive lifestyle, and I have this feeling that these people are more or less the farmer type. I wonder how they arrived at that place as well. Did you go into that?
That's a good question. No, absolutely not. They did not go into that.
I mean, I imagine everybody in that story has their own little, you know, in that town has their own little story of how they arrived there. Okay, so that was Saturday afternoon, right?
But yeah, Chris did say something that they were kind of sitting around the town. And I guess they have like, you know, men's night out or something, and it was just the guys. And I guess there were five of them. I think Joe, was that it?
I believe so. Five or there six. Yeah.
There was a men's group, and they had kind of, you know, all shared this. You know, the idea of the crash course concepts and what were they going to do about it. And they kind of, you know, went from there. I think that's where everything got started. And, you know, I don't know if that was Chris's intent from the beginning or if they just kind of stumbled into it as the whole thing developed, you know, from when they started 7 years ago.
Okay, so that was like Saturday afternoon sometime, and then so Saturday evening, is that right? Saturday afternoon is when Chris and Becca gave their own personal story, and then you move. Then Saturday evening, was it to dinner then? And then it was kind of like you sat around some new people, and then what was it?
Well, there's a couple things you passed over.
Okay, all right, sure, go ahead, fill them in.
There were several examples they gave of how they did events to reach out to their community. They've been raising chickens and turkeys, so they just invited anyone who wanted to come help them slaughter their animals for food storage and learn the process. And a bunch of people showed up, and then they had a big dinner with people that helped them, like sometime after that, and multiple examples like that where they just held events and did things to get to know people in their community. I'm sure Kat or Joe or someone else has lots of other examples too, but that's the main one I think that just popped out in my mind. But
yeah, the community potluck.
Yes.
Oh, they went over that again on Sunday morning, too. Yeah, when we get to Sunday morning, we can talk about how they rolled that back in.
I wanted to add one more thing about the Christmas community. He told me this later. The county that where the town that the county where the town that Chris lives in is the poorest county in Massachusetts. Imagine that.
Wow. So on a spreadsheet, they look terrible.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, the quality of life can't be great. I mean, it must be terrible there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think we all sat there jealous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think every single one of us had a feeling of what I would give to be a neighbor in that community.
Yeah.
May I jump in here? This is Sam.
Yeah,
of course, Sam.
Quick question.
You were supposed to have been there.
I was just going to say.
The more I hear,
it's
the more
yours
I wish
as much
I was.
As mine. It's like he's been in this he treats it like a chat room.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by the way, as I typed just a moment ago, that Chris found this group by Googling. Did he indicate how? I mean, it's like, how do you do that? How do you?
You won't believe this. You won't believe how they found this place. And I don't know, Joe, do you think we should let Kat talk about the visioning and how Becca and Chris found the place? I don't know how to describe it to do it justice.
Sure. Why not?
No, you tell it. But this sounds hokey, but it's not hokey. If you were there for the weekend, you'd appreciate this visioning exercise.
Yeah, this Becca had been talking about this visioning. And, you know, I just kind of sat there thinking, okay, what are we going to do here? And then she actually did a visioning exercise for the group. And, Joe, you were down there, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
So it was... And this is going to be a woefully inadequate description of it, but basically it was you visualize what it is you want, what the perfect scenario, what the perfect, sequence of events is, and you start each day with getting this picture in your mind of what it is you're working towards. And so she had this vision, when they were talking about, finding a new community and moving, and she had this vision of, the perfect house with, the apple orchards and the horses and the ducks and the, all this stuff. And when they started looking for property, their real estate agent called and said, hey, I've got this property. It's a rental, so I know you're going to love it, and I'm not going to get any commission on it, but let's go out and take a look. And Becca had envisioned this, property a widow, whose husband had died and the kids were scattered across the country, and they would get the house by either buying it from this widow. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
They met this woman. her husband had died a couple years earlier. The kids were in Ohio and California or wherever, and so they started renting from her, and it was smack dab in the middle of this community. I mean, what am I, Lucas, Joe, what am I leaving out? You can't Google that, Sam.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think how to condense that into a search box.
but, I think, well, it's evident that they firmly believe that they manufacture their own destiny, and that's exactly what they did. And they're still in the place.
I'm curious, is it a farmhouse they're renting?
Yeah, farmhouse and what was it, Joe?
Two acres.
2 acres.
1,500 square feet, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, not that big.
You realize that for those of us on the other side of the fence, as it were, what you just said is a little difficult to digest, if you will. I mean, I'm trying to put this as delicately as I can. You understand?
Hey, Sam. Sam, exactly. I know exactly what you're thinking because I sat there in the chair thinking, what? Do we now start, you know, burning incense and dancing in circles? if I hadn't been there, you know, this is either an elaborately fabricated story, and I not for a second believe that. I think that's what they did, you know. There was something else working.
Yeah, I think someone in the chat room brought up a really good point, though. Is like, you know, what are the jobs around there? You know, let's say I move there and I've got all these skills that are of no use in a small agricultural community. You know, I know that Chris runs the site, but what are other people doing as well? You know, this may not be a question that you can answer, but
it's a good question, though. How do people survive? And, you know, assuming they don't have this huge stash of cash that they walked in the door with that they're living off.
Yeah, because we spent our entire lives learning a skill that, you know, wouldn't be very necessary in a small farming community. But that's a separate point altogether. But, you know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say another reason they wanted to get out of Mystic. What basically Chris said, he didn't want this crap for his children. And this is the lives he wanted his children, a life they could thrive in. And that was another reason for leaving the life they had.
The biggest problem I have with that, and it's not a problem with what Chris and Becker did, don't misunderstand me, is that they were able to make the move into something that worked for them. And
yeah.
I'm trying to think how to word this.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, just real quick, let me interrupt. That's what this was about. This is what works for them, and we're all to do what works for us. This is not a suggestion of what we should do. This is just what they did. Okay. And, I mean, they made that real clear. You've got to do what's best for you and your family.
Yeah, but the problem is they make it sound so good.
I'll tell you what, Sam.
I mean, no, it wasn't easy. You know, they had to make some huge decisions.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Sam, is and I won't throw this – I'll edit this out, but I live in the same sort of community here. You know, there's a lot of community here. You know, everybody knows each other. You know, I mean, me and my wife went on a walk tonight, and we left the front and back door open so we could get have that cool air pass through the house while we were gone, keep it cool. And it's a very safe society, and you know everybody, and I'm part of a CSA, and there's a lot of agriculture around us. I switched careers from, you know, selling steel, which is a desk job when I'm working phones, and to where, you know, now I'm a mortician. I mean, a mortician is very necessary in communities like this. So, but I feel the same way. It's like I needed to, I kind of saw things were going bad, so I made changes, you know. So it's, I mean, and they're all over the place. I mean, in this community of 10,000 people, you know, there may be 15, 16 other couples like Chris. He happened to reach out and find him. I haven't found too many like myself, but, you know, some of these people have been living this way their entire life.
Yeah.
You know, where guys recycle everything. Every little thing. If I'm going to throw something away, they look at it and go, well, don't throw that away. I can use it on my, you know, fill in the blank. I mean, they're very resourceful people here. It's amazing what they do. So, they're all over the place. But you want to move to Saturday night? I want to get a little bit more of like the interactions that you guys had with other people from the site. You know, the kind of the group chats you had, or maybe even some of the camaraderie you had with other people. You know,
well, one of the things, and I know Lucas and Joe did it as well. I think everybody pretty much did it, but none of us ate with the same people meal to meal. You know, the tables, there were like eight or so people at each table, and you just bounce around to meet everybody and talk to everybody and find out where they were from and, you know, at what stage they were in. And, you know, to get the different perspective of, you know, what their background, how it had shaped them and how it kind of constrained or framed, you know, their approach to this whole crash course and community building effort. It was amazing. You know, I was in a group with a guy in his 70s who he and his wife lived in Mexico. You know, they don't have any heat. They don't have any air conditioning because they don't need it. You know, that's what they do. There was somebody else in the group. She was a farmer, you know, and they grew all their food. And it was interesting when we were going through the self-assessments and developing our prioritized actions lists. They didn't care about that. That wasn't on their list of things to worry about because, you know, they had 20,000 gallons of kerosene stored on the farm to use for heat. All the wood they needed for heat. They grew their food. They had wells. You know, they had backup power. You know, everything. But the things that concerned them didn't concern other people because of the perspective that they had. I don't know, Joe, Lucas, what was it like in your groups?
You talking about the breakout groups?
Yeah.
Well, just when we were doing the self-assessments and just, you know, the cross-section of people that were there and, you know, the sidebar conversations that came up at lunch and all of that. I thought it was amazing to see this huge spectrum of experience and perspective and, you know, where people were coming from. And I could have been like an empty sponge just bouncing around from table to table and having people pour stuff into my brain.
I had so many different conversations with people from so many different backgrounds. And the thing that was crazy was I felt like right from the first dinner before we'd even, you know, sat down Friday night to hear Chris and his wife talk, it just seemed like I was able to connect instantly with people and have fairly meaningful conversations with people I never even met before. And it was like that the whole weekend.
Mm-hmm. Any interesting stories as to how somebody arrived on the site, you know, or maybe an interesting background on somebody that you met?
Well, like, yeah, Catherine said that some people just found the site.
Yeah, the guy from New Mexico, 2 months ago, he found it.
Yeah, you have people that have done this for 2 months.
I forgot his name. The guy who lived outside Washington. In the 1970s, he actually installed a 1,000-gallon gas tank in his at his house. This is back when there was an energy crunch. So he's been doing this for 30 years. He's been expecting, being cautious.
You think it would have been burned by that event, you know, like, oh, man, I can't believe I have 1,000 gallons of gasoline from 1960. Okay, so let's move on from that. Sure. Sunday, or do you want to talk about Saturday evening at all? Or have we gone over that quite a bit already?
Well, Saturday evening was far less formally structured. What they did is before dinner, they said, you know, who wants to talk about what in breakouts? And then, you know, people just kind of raised their hand, threw out some topics.
Give me some ideas here. Community,
there was a group
maybe.
To, you know, go talk about finances. And then they just had a little bonfire.
Yeah,
and we went down and played the guitar and mandolin for a little while, and people sat around just, you know, in small groups doing, you know, different, you know, having different conversations and discussions. And I mean, we talked about anything and everything. I think Lucas, you went to the financial session, and that was about 3.5 hours, wasn't it?
Yeah, it ended up going pretty late. I don't think anyone was looking at a clock.
What kind of things were brought up in the financial? Because that's probably where I would have headed. Because, you know, the older you get, the more money you amass, and the more you are terrified that you might lose it. You know, so I wonder what the topics were.
Yeah.
Or just the suggestions were.
You had a select group of people who were kind of in a predicament where they got their 401ks have been smashed, and they're trying to figure out if they can get out of them, what they can do, and then some of us that were younger who maybe don't have 401ks or don't have much in them were, you know, wondering about what we can do from that angle. A lot of talk about precious metals. Mostly that was the three major breakup of the conversation.
What was the consensus on precious metals so Sam can hear?
Thank you.
Well,
I was going to ask that.
I think pretty much everyone – For the most part, was pretty much by the end of the conversation, believed that was a worthwhile way to preserve your wealth through the next several years or more.
So is the idea then that don't worry about the short-term movements, just get it and, you know, an X amount or X percentage, whatever your level of comfort is, and don't worry that it's 890 this week and 930 the next 2 days or something?
Well, to a certain degree, I think you got to also take into consideration, maybe there might be things that are higher priority, maybe. But if you have the money and it's something that could, you know, you can, and you can do it in smaller amounts, definitely, even if it was, you know, just buying a little bit wouldn't kill you. But yeah, I think that's the general. And Chris Martinson talked a little bit about it, saying that it could even be one of your tier one action items, depending, you know, if it, 'cause it's easy to do. Just a phone call away, you know.
Chris is went over where his portfolio is. He's moved up his allocation in gold and silver up to 75% from 50.
You're kidding.
He said 75%.
Yep. Yeah.
I wonder, just in gold and silver. I mean, has he spread it around into other precious metals? Because those are going gangbusters as well. I mean, did he say?
He said it was gold and silver. 75% gold and silver.
Okay.
He said gold, silver, platinum, gold, silver.
Yeah.
In that order.
Somebody
one,
asked,
two, three, four,
what
five.
Precious metals would you buy? And he said gold, silver, platinum, then gold and silver. Yep.
Platinum's pretty expensive.
That's a good point. He did talk about copper. Yeah. He said you should be accumulating copper because
the Chinese are doing it in I mean, they're just amassing it in enormous quantities. But and they're also grabbing some. There's three other metals that I've never heard of before that the Chinese are just stockpiling right now. I mean, and they've also amassed a large amount of. It was last Friday they announced that they have over 1,000 tons of gold.
Yeah,
that's up from like 600. I don't know if was that brought up at all. I mean, that just hit on Friday.
Yes.
It was brought up. I mean, that's how they're going to make their exit. The Chinese are going to make their exit out of the dollar. In precious metals, so that's
he talked about that. What they're doing is they're using their dollars to buy that hard commodity.
Yeah,
copper, silver, gold, palladium.
So not a lot of people like us buy copper, though. I mean, you can't buy a ton of copper and store it in the backyard. It's kind of hard to do. So does he do it through ETFs or then there's always a question.
He said that he had physical possession of the gold and would give you the GPS coordinates on the break. That was a joke. He said it's in the bank.
Yeah, I think I have a feeling that like small community banks, you know a couple guys down the bank, it's a little bit safer than say putting it at like a at a mega city like Chicago or St. Louis downtown, Citibank or Bank of America. I think those are probably the first places to run through. What's up?
How does he deal with the copper issue, though? I still don't quite
understand.
He
wasn't
that.
In copper, though. But
he's talking about, that's a commodity. If I understood you correctly, Rick, he talked about that as a commodity that you should look into.
Well, he showed a picture of that, 1,500-pound copper nugget that those two guys found. And he said, this isn't going to happen ever again, and that you should have copper.
Yeah, how?
I don't know. We've got copper. We've got copper.
Yeah, but through, a fund or?
We bought from a physical dealer. I don't know what it was from, but it's a, 1 pound bar of 0.999 copper.
Yeah, Aaron just pointed out pennies. I think before 1981, pennies before 1981 have a lot of copper in them.
Huh.
Okay, so let's kick off Sunday morning. And then we'll talk about the sleeping arrangements.
Sunday, I think, was probably the meat and potatoes day. Aaron, this gets to the question you asked, of kind of like the what next. I think, everybody had that question in their mind. So what we did is we got the self-assessments out. And if you haven't done that, you need to fill out the self-assessment on the site, take the time to go through it and answer it, and then go back through. And what we did is we pulled off the self-assessment the different things that we needed to do. And based on how you're answering your questions, you kind of had a vision in your mind of what kind of scenario it is we're going to have to deal with. Certainly it could range from nothing is going to happen to Mad Max.
Yeah.
And obviously it's going to be something in between. So you build a plan and you start working towards it. Well, what we did is we populated our action items. What are all of the things that you need to do? And, if you had a medical condition, you'd have to worry about stockpiling medicine or, finding alternatives. If, you lived in an urban place, you needed to answer the question of how you were going to, ensure that you had food. We had two guys from Queens. They were these self-titled city slickers.
Wow.
And they were like, we can't grow food anywhere. Yeah. Their reality is they live in downtown Queens. So everybody kind of built their action items, all the things that they needed to get done. And then Becca took us through this exercise that prioritized them. And, the tier one things, the things that I can do right now, the things that are cheap. And, Joe said something as simple as, going to the bank and pulling out $400 cash or some amount of cash. So you have cash on hand, mark progress off on your checklist. But you need to be doing something. And because as you do something, you get that sense of achievement and accomplishment, and then you just there's always something to be working on. Becca yeah. made that point over and over again. There's always something to be working on. And if you get yourself to the point where everything on your list is checked off, then go help somebody else check their list off. They prioritize lists, and I was kind of surprised that the way that they prioritize this, but it makes perfect sense. For me, it would be, like the biggest, most important thing with no barriers. So, of course, after we had this list of things we needed to do, we had to go and list all the barriers that would prevent us or slow you down in getting those things knocked out. And, we talked a little bit about them. In some cases, it was just money. If one of your goals was to, buy gold, well, if you don't have the money, you need to get it. If one of your goals was to, establish continuity of power through either windmills or solar, a barrier to that might be the cost and the labor and the time to install the system. So we went through and we prioritized, and if it was basically painless to accomplish, it was tier one, and knock those out and then, work your way through your list. And as you work your way through the list, things would move around. So that Aaron, I know that's, I don't know if that answers the question, but, the what next was really up to you based on how you filled out your self-assessment. What are the things that you think you need to get done? Prioritize them and get started.
Rick, can you hear me? This is Aaron.
Yeah.
I've got another question. Going back to the topic, you said that there was kind of variable levels of what people were expecting in terms of everything just kind of gets interrupted versus the Mad Max situation. Did you notice a disparity between people in a more rural setting versus the self-proclaimed city slickers? Was there a big difference between the two?
I don't think it really came up. I think everybody kind of, I got the sense that everybody thought that there was going to be, interruptions in power. Chris kind of framed it on the first day. He said, the things you could expect are, an increase in crime, social unrest, interruptions in food and in power. What else was on that list? Joe, Lucas, it was, for us living in Virginia Beach, it was stuff you could expect if there was a hurricane, or if lived in the Midwest, something that you might expect after a tornado or, flooding if you're in North Dakota or something. I don't think we really talked about what it specifically was that that we were going to be dealing with. It was more of a what you think it's going to be. Construct your priority list and your action item list based on that.
Okay.
Did I check out that part of it, Joe or Lucas, or is that what you guys took away?
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah. I mean, I left it with a massive shopping list. it was great talking to other people to see what they've done, and it's like, oh, okay, I didn't think of that. So now I can go back and, you know, buy that ham radio or the water purifier if you want to talk about that.
I guess, Aaron, the answer to your question is, you know, depending on where you were coming from, different things were important. You know, like I said, the couple that were farmers, they didn't care about food because they had that part wrapped up.
Yeah, I think Aaron's question is terrific because, you know, those two city slickers, once they made the realization that this might become a reality, that's terrifying. You know, and not so much for the farmers, but, you know, they're preparing in their own way. But for those city slickers, this is a huge wake up call for them. Did you feel they felt that way?
I don't think either one of them was scared. I think they kind of realized that, you know, they're going to get to a point where they need to make some decisions about, you know, changes in the way they're living their life. You know, and one of the guys, I think it was Will, said that, you know, he would consider moving out of the city, and just have to eat the commute or, you know, whatever, to continue working. But
even on those outlying areas, I mean, if he's in Queens, the commute, I mean, he'd have to commute 4 hours from upstate New York to be in a situation where it could be a little bit more sustainable. You know, I mean, there are millions of people that may just, you know, evacuate the city. I don't know how that's going to play out for the large cities. I know that I'm 5 hours away from Chicago, I don't think I'll be affected at all. But for those people that are 1 hour south or east or west of Chicago, which is very similar to New York City, in my opinion, they're going to feel some effects of a fallout from like disruptions in power and especially the food. I mean, that food has got to get all the way inside the city, and it doesn't grow there. It has to be brought in. So.
Kat just told me that she was talking with Will, and the nature of his business, he can commute. He can, you know, telecommute.
So he could
move and still work.
Okay.
So, you know, but that's now a new variable in his equation, and he's just going to have to go, you know, make it fit.
Okay. So now we move to Sunday morning, and then how long did this last? Was this into the afternoon portion?
That was 9 until noon.
Not until noon.
All that community.
Okay, everything Sunday was, you know, here's your list, roll it into community. They went over the toolbox again and just kept foot stomping the glue. You know, the thing, no one's going to get through this by themselves as good as they could with community. And, you know, your community could be, you know, a couple of people. It could be living in a town like Chris and Becca, but that's the way you're going to get through it.
Okay, and so noon was the end time for this.
Yeah.
No lunch.
Okay.
Well, we had lunch.
Yeah.
And it was tough. It was tough to say goodbye to everybody.
Yeah. Okay, so now we move to the end of it. I kind of want to get like a kind of a synopsis of what you thought, you know. You must have just came away going, you feel energized by all the material that you've absorbed and met and the people that you've met. You know, what were your feelings as you walked away from the seminar?
Yeah, I'm probably more optimistic than ever. I feel like I got some, maybe I got some answers to some of the questions that I had. I felt like I got some guidance as to what I can do. I want to take more action, be proactive. You know, I almost feel like I want to be a leader. Now that I see this coming, I feel like I want to be there. I kind of like what Daniel had said a couple weeks ago. You kind of want to have food for when stuff happens. You know, you want to take a leadership role. But I said also earlier, I have a shopping list of things I want to have on hand. But yeah, I'm more optimistic than ever. I really, hated leaving yesterday. And then, you know, when I got to work today and the urban jungle, it was just like, oh, I just wish I had a simpler lifestyle, you know, like Chris has, or, you know, in a community setting. So that's pretty much what I got out of it. It was a great experience. Obviously other people are going to hear this, but I recommend anyone to sign up for one in the future if Chris has one later this year.
By the way, before I move on to Lucas, is there another one planned for sometime later this year?
I don't think so. Not as yet.
Not yet. Okay. So, Lucas, give me a feeling that you got when you pulled away from the seminar.
I think a lot of the similar things, you know, a shopping list personally, but then also I think I got some ideas as far as ways to communicate the crash course to people in my general area. And also, I think after going through the self-assessment and then actually, like everyone else said throughout, you know, listening to their story, I think contemplating, you know, making a move as to eventually getting to an area that's, you know, either a little bit further away from so many people or not necessarily moving out to the middle of nowhere, but just maybe possibly relocating to a place. Even if I stay in the city, I don't really want to stay in an apartment. Can't grow anything, you know, not a lot of things I can't make modifications to where I live. So I think it just gave a lot of action items, definitely some shorter term goals I've got set, and then some longer term things to think about.
The house across the street still for sale, Lucas.
I might be coming by to take a look.
Well, they have a pool, so we know where we're swimming.
That's water storage.
Yep.
So go ahead, Rick. Give me your...
You know, same thing. I think Joe said it. We went there kind of knowing stuff that we having an idea of things that we had to do, and that was intimidating. But after the seminar, you were just so much more optimistic. You know, it's kind of like you're just looking at the things that you need to get done, and you go, let's do it. You know, it's not, oh, crap, look at all the stuff we need to get done. It was energizing, and at the same time, you just got this peace of mind that it can be done, and you just you have to go out and get it done. So, you know, we took a lot of comfort in the fact that we were there with, you know, eight other people from Virginia Beach and close, you know, so that, you know, while we don't all live in the same neighborhood, we all, you know, if something did happen, you know, and somebody got displaced, there'd be places to go, you know, and we would figure out a way to, you know, to make it work together. You know, so that's now what you kind of, you know, go off and work on.
Okay, well,
although we did get something crossed off our list because Becca gave Catherine a really nice water filter, one of these high capacity water filters, and so I crossed that off the list.
Okay, well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate you spending your time with us and giving us kind of a recap of what happened in Lowesville. I appreciate it. Thanks.
One more thing.
What's that?
I might throw in. He gave us all the three DVD sets for doing presentations. It's in the format for. So I think even if you weren't there and didn't get one, you can order one. But I think they're great for showing to neighbors. You know, just even put up posters and. Or not posters, but some kind of advertisement. You could do a showing at like a library. Just get people in your area who might be interested and see who shows up.